So there are several opportunities. Certainly, it's not simply just growing it and processing it. There's several entities that participate. So a lot of opportunity, obviously cultivation, which is what we do. Processing extractions, different arena, taking the plant materials, driving oils, and then processing it to some ingestible or consumable product. Dispensary operations, both medical and recreational. We've got testing. Testing is always a huge hot topic for any state with their initiative. Typically, it's third party. Security, also an enormously hot topic for states. Supply chain. So we're always getting hit up by folks that are knocking on the door. Hey, try this nutrient. Try this new light. So there's several opportunities for packaging, consumables, professional services, such as Dimitri, legal, the lobbying, tax, consulting, such as ourselves, contracting, C2Sell software companies. We've got public and state services, so legislative advisory, lobbying, and investment opportunities. So ArcView, which is sort of like a shark tank to the cannabis industry, or similar. So we're going to talk, just kind of break down some of the primary, so cultivation, some pros and cons to being a cultivator. Again, this is the cash cow of the industry. This is where the magic begins, so the highest revenue potential. But it's got some enormous overhead, some high startup costs, employment, and creation of jobs. In our facility, we have in the neighborhood of about 85 employees at any given time. So that's a great opportunity for any state to bring in jobs. But it's also got a high is certainly probably our highest expense. Local capital investments, so you're being able to invest locally. You've got rigorous compliance. So it's you've always got the thumb and the eyeball of the state on you, constantly being audited, probably more than any other industry. And so we have a dedicated compliance officer. State licenses, so typically when a state is deploying, it's not like back in the good old days where in Colorado it was really a free-for-all. Anybody could meet some very basic requirements and pay the application fee to get in the industry. And so you saw not only the big players getting it, but you saw the boutiques, the basements, rooms, sort of operations getting it as well. Today, though, most states do not afford that luxury. Very competitive landscape, a very limited number of licenses that are going to be awarded. So that can bode well for any operation that's looking to be awarded. But you've got to find marketplaces as well, specifically when it comes to a medical initiative. Recreation is a little bit more of an open opportunity, but it's certainly really fine. The pro is a precursor to adult use, so most states will not launch recreational use from the beginning. Typically want to dip their little toe into the water and test out with a medical clinician to begin with. But ultimately, the goal being to break open that market wide open down the road. So get in, establish yourself, get some name recognition, establish your brand, and get really dialed in, get the ball rolling. Then happen, you're going to be in a much better spot. And then again, technical challenges, which we've already touched on a bit. So.
And just to preface this, Mark went through the list of all the opportunities that are available in this market space, and we're going to just kind of hit on the top four things that we really kind of specialize in and see. So the next kind of vertical that we see really emerging marketplace slide a little bit later, but the extraction, processing, infused products, edibles, they have the highest profit margins in the industry. So that's one of the pros. One of the cons is that there's equipment that's involved in it. So you have extraction equipment. A lot of times people who are processing or making infused products also have labs, kind of in-house laboratories set up in their facilities to kind of account for quality control. Is that there's increasing market share. So we're seeing that marketplaces in Colorado, we're seeing it where you know, it's very much predominantly flower marketplace, where we're seeing edibles, concentrates, and juice products gaining more and more market share. But there's also some variable employment costs that go along with it. It's got a lower start, even though the equipment costs are high, it is lower startup cost than when you're building out a 40,000 square foot cultivation facility. It can take, you know, you can do your operations building footprint, so lower startup cost that in that regard. But of all kinds of verticals of the marketplace, it's got the most rapid regulatory changes. So we see in Colorado that you know Colorado's now established a dose is 10 milligrams, and the most can be sold off on the adult use side is 100 milligram pack. So we even have 10 milligram doses in a package. So that changed from something that was. So people who are making products are constantly having to change your equipment. You know, now it has to be stamped a certain way, then it has to be stored a certain way. Now it has to have, you know, a triangle with an exclamation point imprinted onto every product that comes out. So with those regulatory changes, people are constantly having to change their business model, their equipment, so there's costs and challenges on the regulatory part of that. On the pro, that there's really robust line of products that continue to come out. So whether that's oils or topicals or tinctures, we've got soda lines, beverage lines, candy bars, hard candies, baked products, pet products. So a really robust line of products that can be created. So a lot of opportunity in that space. Some of the challenges that we're seeing our processing partners have is actually sourcing the material. So if you're not fully integrated and you don't have a cultivation facility attached to your processing license, sometimes they're having challenges about, you know, we've had, you know, is it geared towards children? It can't look like a gummy bear anymore. So poor public education in that regard. So we as an industry are trying to do a better job of educating consumers and the public, making sure that our budtenders behind the counter are informing customers on the other side of the counter of how, you know, the whole start low, go slow approach, and just making sure that the public is educated about how consumption of these products.
Recreation care, that's you know, the stories that we get in the dispensary, the mother who comes in so grateful telling her story on how their child with 100 seizures a day got reduced down to one or two, and it just has transformed their lives. These things are just so gratifying as operators to be able to know that you're doing something. On high security cash handling. You know, it's a very cash heavy industry. We'll talk a bit about the banking situation. But early on, back in the heyday, back in 09, when things were really cranking up in Colorado, it was very cash heavy. We were a target. And to keep too much of that on the premise can be very, very dangerous for yourself as an operator and for your patients and clients coming to the door. Employment, creation of jobs, but you have higher staff turnover. I'm sorry, I got a question for that. So, you know, for us, no. Karen will certainly talk about that. But for us specifically, most of any issues we ever have in one journal, we do not have folks come in. Now, we have the luxury of having armed guards. We used to keep that internal security. That's very costly to do that. We have a third party that takes care of security for us. They're all ex-military, ex-police force. They are licensed to carry armed weapons. They do. And that, particularly for our older clientele, that's a huge relief to have that. So luckily, we have lower overhead. So lower overhead, you know, it doesn't take a 40,000 square foot facility operation to get going on the storefront. We've seen them as small as 500 square feet. We've seen them as large as 5,000 square feet. You can, you know, arrange that any way you want. We do have a dispensary that opened up about a year ago that opened up in a car wash. And it does very well on a very small footprint. So, you have higher competition. So a lot of times, once again, going back to these states, typically you're going to have a very limited number of cultivation processing licenses that typically take all four or a bit larger number when it comes to the dispensary operations. So you could have certainly more competition to deal with. Alternatives. So, folks who have a conscience, they are very thrilled to come to the black market to pick up the product. They know they can go to a safe environment where it's legal, where the product has been tested, and it's quality product, and so they don't have to worry about going to some dark alley. So it's really safe that way. Third party dependency. So, if you're not in a state where integrated, where you can be growing it or processing it yourself, you're depending upon the supply chain, depending upon sourcing the material. And typically, the concerns that you're going to have as a dispensary that's a standalone is, where do I source my product? And how quality is that product that I'm slapping my name or reputation on coming into my door? We also have a pro-adult use. Now, we saw it. First 5 years of our operations was in the market, and we started about 0.8% of the population had a medical card, which slowly grew over time. But we really didn't see things really, really skyrocket until about 2 years ago, January, when we launched the adult use. Today, adult use is about 70% of our business, and most of that business. Folks that are coming in on vacation, coming in to grab something in the mountains. So we definitely saw a great uptick in what we were doing in our operations with that. And then a con is the tax burden, the IRS code 280. We'll talk a little bit more in depth about this, but essentially, just to summarize, you have about a 90% effective tax rate burden. So we wouldn't go into detail about that a little bit later.
So the final one that we're going to talk about is vertical integration. And one of the pros, so vertical integration is when you have multiple licenses. And this is very state dependent. Some states segregate the license types, so you can only be a cultivator, you can only be a processor, you can only be a dispensary operation. Other states allow a fully vertically integrated model, like Arizona currently is right now. So if you have a license to operate, that means you can cultivate, process, and dispense. So the pros to that is that you have operational efficiency in that. So the back of the house, you've got one person managing the accounting, one person managing compliance, one person kind of in the back end doing all that for kind of multiple business verticals. One of the cons of that is that each of those verticals in and of itself can be very expensive. forestry operation attached to it. So in Colorado, our model is like that. So in our large, you know, we've got 40,000 square foot cultivation facility and an adult and medical assisted dispensary attached to it. Some other states mandate that those buildings cannot be together. So some kind of really challenging. It is also another, you know, pro that you can maximize your profit margin. You have, again, control of that entire supply chain. That, you know, there's a lot of risk management. So if something were to happen, one of those verticals of your business, it really can put the other two verticals of that business at risk. One of the pros is we've got cross-training capabilities. We've got people that start in one, maybe a lower level position in the company, and we're able to train in different areas within the business. And then one of the challenges is the internal communication. You've got different people running different departments. Sometimes the, you know, right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, so sometimes the internal communication can be a challenge. Now we're going to move on. I'm going to talk to you about some of the industry trends that we've seen in the marketplace.
For this section, we've got some acronyms, med, medical marijuana, and rational terms of recreational marijuana. The point of this section is to help give you a light on what is happening in both markets, a little more data in the rec markets. I thought that was appropriate to be voting on that in a few weeks. These are some industry-wide trends that we're seeing. Flower is still number one, so we're talking about marijuana in flower form. When I say number one, the most consumed product in legal states. But oils, concentrates, edibles, infused products are on the rise, and their market share is growing more rapidly at this point than flower is. Showed the graph earlier, the visual earlier, half of the U.S. states now have medical programs, likely more coming this fall based on the outcomes of the election in November. That means we're about 50% tipping point from the United States, which is quite impressive. Rec and adult use regulation is really driving growth on the West Coast. So to visualize this, we have recreational markets in Alaska, which is, I think they just had their first rec sale. Rec market in the state of Washington, the state of Oregon, and California, which is the state of 40 million people, will be voting on rec on November 8th. If you actually consider the implications of that, you have a rec market from Alaska, from Canada, more or less all the way to Mexico. That is probably setting the most convincing stage for interstate trade coming down the line. But that is really what's happening in the West. And that's just an American landscape to begin with. The Western states be a little more progressive, and the eastern states tend to see what goes on out west and decide that it's going to be a good fit for their state. So with Arizona voting on rec, Nevada voting on rec, considerably have a large portion of the western United States operating in the rec marketplace here by 2018. The research and testing opportunities are opening up at the state level. As Carrie has mentioned, we're very involved in the state of Pennsylvania right now. Governor Wolf signed their bill back in April. We're anticipating final regulations to be out sometime in the fourth quarter and applications for permits to be issued end of year or early first quarter of 2017. They have a section of their bill, Senate Bill 3, which actually discusses clinical registrants. So taking private companies, partnering with actual universities to do real clinical research, medical trials on cannabis. It's the first time we've seen the state try and dip their toe into that area. But if successful, if they figure out a way to get that off the ground, I think those are the things that are going to eventually persuade the government to consider a reposition of marijuana. They need, you know, third-party independent clinical trials of cannabis and what it does for people with different conditions to really be validated and tested before I think we're going to get much further on the medical end of that. But that opportunity is opening up. What we're seeing in operational markets, and we've had to deal with this in Colorado, is the pesticide management and associated regulations evolving quickly. We are constantly under a barrage of regulatory change for what we can do in our facilities with regard to growing. Gone are the days of being able to use any product off the shelf to treat the crop, or manage infestation, or pests, or pathogens. But it is basically indoor agriculture. And we don't have, or at least have not had, about the same standards that outdoor advocacy is on through the states, because these products are aware of being required to be tested and they ultimately make their way to consumers, there's an increased focus on what we treat our plants. So that is a good thing. Some businesses are slow to respond to that, negatively affected by that. Us and others of the people in health facilities use have no problem with this. Have more regulation in space. So that is something that we're going to continue to see more of as the industry matures. This is some data on the medical consumers in the state of Colorado. So this may be surprising, some of you may not, but this was from June. This was issued by the Marijuana Enforcement Division, which is our regulatory body in the state of Colorado. This just pulls a little bit of gender, puts some demographics for you guys to look at, dispel some. The average age for a male medical marijuana patient in the state of Colorado is just under 42 years old. Female, just above 45 years old. So the average combined age of patients in our state is 42 years old. Just think about it, dead smack in the middle of consumer base, right? That's not, that doesn't seem young, that doesn't seem old. That is the average age. About two-thirds male, which I think is probably more in line with the stereotypes we would expect, but female use. When you look at the actual age group breakdown, so everyone from 0 to 10 to 71 and older, we have about 400 patients in the state of Colorado that are minors. So their parents act as their caregivers. Those are children primarily with epilepsy issues or seizure disorders. As you can see, the top reporting condition is just that. As you go down the list, 18 to 20, almost 10 year intervals, so 71 and older, the numbers are pretty consistent for the number of. You're talking about 22%, 20%, 16%, 14%. I don't see a huge gap in those numbers. And the top reported condition is severe pain. The reason that's important, when we look at medical states, medical-only states, is severe pain is essentially a catch-all for different health conditions. We have cancer, we have AIDS, glaucoma, these other serious, serious medical conditions. But for a medical-only marketplace to grow, be an actual pilot market, is having chronic persevering on the list of conditions is something that has allowed the state to grow. So that's important. That's another chart to show. Rec demographics. This is pulled from Headset Cannabis Intelligence, their third party data aggregator. There will be more big data coming out in our space as more data becomes available. But if you think of any other consumer products category, there's tons of them. Companies based on marketing off of, based on messaging off of. We are just starting to scratch the surface on that. But what we do know, and it's supported by the Colorado Medical Statistics, is about two-thirds of direct consumers nationally are men. So 68% versus 31% for women. If you look at the actual age breakout, this is again for rec. It does skew a little younger than the medical numbers that we see. See 25 to 29 leading this about 20%, and then as age goes on, those numbers diminish. However, there is no glaring lack of consumers as you get up to 55, 60, 65 years old. There's still make up 15% of the market. So, as you consider getting business on the ground, consider your messaging, your targeting. And I like to use the analogy, if you came into one of our shops, a rec shop, sat there for 2 hours and watched you in the door, any stereotype. Child, all the way to a senior citizen who's 85 years old, all ethnicities. There is no stereotype that can or cannot use marijuana. You can or cannot use or want to use recreational marijuana. It just doesn't exist. Consumer spending, this is, I've got our numbers actually pulled in. The average ticket price, I think it's a division is getting bad, between $25 Our numbers are higher than that. Our average medical receipt in Colorado per trip basis is $102. Our average rec receipt in our Denver store is $89 per visit. Our average ticket in our store is grocery store, 15 minutes from the international airport, get a lot of tourists. the ski industry is big in our state. We are in our quietest month right about now, in the month of October, and November, but come December, January, we have really healthy sales months, like ski season, ski in Colorado. Aurora is not close to the international airport. It's the store I showed earlier. That average ticket is a little less. Those tend to be people from the town of Aurora. They're all Colorado residents. We're staying. So our numbers are a little higher. We see the data tell us. We just wanted to give you guys an idea of what people are spending for a basis. Consumer spending annualized. This is what they're reporting. The highest percentage is $1,000 a year on cannabis products. I think the average actual being right in the $650 range for consumer on an annual basis. So if you think about that, that should help give you a little bit of what people tend to spend in our store. We have people on a much higher than that scale, and we'll have tourists who just want to come to Colorado and see what this is really like. $25 for again. So there are extremes on the end of that spectrum, but most consumers. Recreational product category trends, national base. This is good information. Number one, still being flower. So percentage of transactions, about 15%. Edibles, 13%. Pre-roll, which I would still classify as flower, because we were just talking about the pre-roll joint, 11%. Concentrates, so for those who are familiar in the room, we're talking about products commonly referred to wax, shatter, oil, or butter. These are basically highly concentrated forms of either THC, cannabis, but they are quickly gaining market share. I'll show some photos of those products shortly. Vapor pens, vaporizers are 8%, and they say growing. So these are similar to e-cigarettes, where you have a part of them, and they're able to vaporize. Beverages, about 3.5%. Tinctures and sublimals, so items administer the tongue, 2%, 2.5%. Topical creams, so pain cream or salve, 1% capsules with a pill form, less than 1%. And then multi-adminative sets. We don't have multi-adminative sets. The medicine man, but I'm sure some students. Maybe we should. The recreational product type trend, so this breaks it down a little further, hopefully everyone can see this. Looking at the flower trends, hybrid flower being number one, 25%, and then because it's sativa's following. So at this stage, legal marijuana lineages for flowers, sativa genetics, indica genetics, those have been crossed because they tend to produce well-balanced strains that fit a broader consumer base. So our top selling strain in this example is called G6 number 3. It's across the East Coast South region, which is a sativa genetic, and Aspen High Country, which is an indica genetic. Those cross create a sativa hybrid, and that's a good fit for the market. So hybrid strains, number one. As you go down this list, big cartridges themselves right behind flower, wax, single strain hybrid pre-rolls. Get into edibles, you're looking at chocolates, candies, lozenges, cookies, pre-rolls again, indica single strain. People do tend to prefer single strain pre-rolls, whereas indica pre-roll or sativa pre-roll, they prefer a G6 number 3 pre-roll. They get used to that experience and replicate that. Shatter, carbonated beverages, truffle edibles, tinctures, disposable vapor pens. So these are popular in Colorado, I'm not surprised. We have a rec market. Save 3 to 5 days. Test the expensive vaporizer for last life, so all paraphernalia, because they can't be safe. So they've developed all in one thing, cartridges, pens, that are disposable, and make it very easy for those who says that for a state. Brownies, caramels, and juice, elixirs, and deep concentrated. So that just gives you an idea. this is specific to our state, but I think it did a good job of demonstrating growth in concentrates and edibles versus flower. So what you see in the left, lighter orange color, is quarter one 2015 sales. What you see in the right column is quarter one 2016 sales. Flower still the clear leader in that space, but still grew by 11% year over year. Edibles, more popular, grew by 53% year over year. Concentrates, the quickest growing category, like I said, things like wax, oil, shatter, grew by 125% year over year. So as consumers opened up to different products and different amounts of administration, to get some education behind what those things are and how to use them properly, they're interested. Flowers long been the same in our industry, but it is still growing. It's just not growing as fast as some of these new different products that people have access to. Part of that interest on the production side is the margins for cannabis products. This was a chart from Marijuana Business Daily. We work closely with their outlets for the space. But infused product margins compared to other consumer goods, so cannabis products. Over 30% margin on products. When you compare it, we consider to be a competitive set, pharmaceutical drugs, wine, spirits, beer, cigarettes, soft drinks, infections, you can see that those margins diminish depending on the specific product. So, if someone's entering the market and wants to produce cannabis products, they can assure a better margin in the period that I showed earlier. This is good because it's a full year 2000. Look at comparatively for Arizona. So, because we operated in the medical market in 2014, we had our first day of recreational sales. This is our second full year operating in that type of marketplace. The top line is recreational marijuana in blue, the bottom line is medical marijuana in red. What this chart tells me is that the sales trends tend to mirror marijuana. It's not like there's a time year where medical sales are popular than rec sales or vice versa. The two coincide and are very stable. As I mentioned, our biggest months are in the summer months and the beginning of the holidays. Our slowest months typically are this time, actually right in October, November. Can anyone guess why that is? California, Mexico, and other outdoor markets harvest their crops. And so our market is legalized greatly. That happens, there is again an oversupply of product. People can get it from the market, but then they go back and the supply has been exhausted in December, January. That is what that dip is in the fourth quarter of 2015. And then the holidays, as I mentioned, the sales tax is coming in today, the ski season, so those are the trends for. Quantify that in its entirety in Colorado. So 2014 at the bottom, we did $700 million worth of business. Of that, recreational was $313,000, and medical was $385 million. That was the first full year of recreational. Skip forward a year, recreational was significantly outpaced medical. It was $600 million, $400 million. We did just shy. Colorado. The indications currently are about 7 to 8 months in 2016 in the state of Colorado in 2016. That's sourced by the cannabis, which is part of the So as you can see, the opportunity, the economic opportunity for that is greater. States, that's a broader marketplace than the medical market in the state of Colorado. We've seen our medical market more or less plateau, 385 to 400 million, that's not a huge jump. That market is stabilized around 1.5 to 2% of our population. The rec market continues to grow exponentially as more people come to the market. So that has been the economic impact. Mark and Carrie mentioned one of the pros and cons of the different vertical opportunities, as well as some of those trends, like the big community teams or so. Questions? Question. So far, we've seen states operate very independently. We're working in Pennsylvania, for example, reading through their regulations. They've pulled very specific language from Maryland. They've pulled very specific language from Colorado. They've pulled language from other states to try and assemble what they feel is regulations for their district. We have not yet seen standardization for regulation. I know there are some companies trying to standardize regulations, but we're just starting to scratch the surface. Part of it goes back to what Harry's saying. There should be laboratory standards that those third party companies have to adhere to. There is typically what we've seen at the state level, you can't have an ownership interest, and you're going to be in touch with the prohibition process and dispensaries. Those states, you're going to run a lab, and you can't have a financial interest in any of those other companies. That's not a surprise. That's fairly standard operating procedure in the states that we work in. However, you're absolutely correct. We find that that's operational side is you get one lab result back from lab company A, and a different lab test back from lab company B, which one, every result, and tell them we're advising clients to do who are entering the cultivation process and say, since you build it, we're investing in your plans, building footprints, so that you at least have an internal mechanism to test your own products before they go to a third party lab. And while that can be somewhat expensive and a little bit technical process, it's a worthwhile investment. I don't think you have to recruit a company that would be here and put it out. After lunch, we have kind of one-on-one cultivation processing for dispensary. A lot of that will help visualize what these different models are. On a very basic level, this question, flower is just marijuana flower. So flower produces buds, cannabis plant, phenom cannabis plant produces buds. Those are typically harvested, cured. And that's what it's brought to the market, helping the flower. So finished flower. Governs what all the other products downstream are. So the next step would be to take that one flower or its trim, extract oil from that, this oil. With that oil, you can go make infused marijuana products. The breadth of that is enormous, so that can be infused beverage. So maybe a beverage infused marijuana, so you can drink it, take a food product. All the way to the kind of more medical end of that, using a tincture or a sublingual prop or a capsule that you can ingest that you put in. So all of those products that you can produce with some sort of oil derivative from the plant itself. But the real separation is just selling it into a flower form or selling it in a huge state, which has a pretty water based products on it. Shatter and wax and concentrate. Just really highly concentrated forms of that extracted oil. So if you just take marijuana and extract it, and its highest efficiency is less than CO2, hydrocarbon solvent, etc., that would just leave and show you a picture of it. About 70, 80, 90% concentrated marijuana product that is just oil based. And now on the visual, that'll demonstrate what that looks like.
Do you have
any
numbers on
your
margin on the difference of flower concentration?
Yeah, we're a high volume flower producer. We do not extract products. So we have good relationships with all the folks that produce those products. So we're a little bit of a we don't track our own market. We have retail markets for those infused products. If I buy them from a chocolate manufacturer for $5, we try and sell for $10. On our flower, we're solely focused on the cost of production because we do control the retail outlets in which we sell our flower. If we can grow a pound of cannabis, let's just use it for $1,000, it would be nice if retail is still trying to protect those retail margins and retail at over $2,000. So I don't shy away from getting into specifics on specific products because we don't make all of those. Typical retail margins for us. I wouldn't say it's oversaturated. It's a big opportunity for folks that want to get into that space. It's Colorado or else. Like I said, besides the common ownership interest, and the state of Indiana financial interest in the cultivation process and the dispensary, you have to have independent ownership or that third party laboratory for conflict of interest reasons. they don't even know what to expect. So there's been some uniformity that it goes to now. And that might be a little high for someone who's never consumed or ingested in this product, like 5 milligrams or even less. That's some kind of person that goes to this. It's just that alcohol intake will be very high in some individuals or others. So they've tried to standardize. Most recently, effective October 1st, they came out with a limitation release of, say, you can save up half of 100 milligrams, and it was divided into 10 individual servings. Each of those individual servings has a THC stamp that identifies that there's marijuana in this product, so that it's not confusing. But there is still concern, and people just don't have an education behind what these products are, or ultimately what they're going to do. And I would say, having worked in several states, I'm not seeing edibles come up on every list. I say Pennsylvania is not going to allow edibles when they roll out their program next year. Certain states are shying away from that, or at least preserving the right to introduce them based on how the market develops. But it is not uncommon to see a state not even allow sweets and savories as part of their deployment. And I think part of that's just a conservative. That gets a little more standardized through medical research and we can actually push it into truly medical offering. I think we'll get back to some sort of standardization for that. But right now, if there is a little bit of a visible in the virus.
Thank you.
one thing that I think is really important is that the role of the cause of composition. We have advertising restrictions, and we're advertising on a lot of us, TV commercials that are advertising marijuana or edibles. And so we have billboards that say, you know, come try it on, and children can see that. It's very limited where that messaging can go. So it's an incentive for alternative media publications. Websites that have 70% plus followers. So there is no built in general marketing that's being done to advertise those to children. And I think if some of the opposition came out, you would see it does work on responsible consumption, especially in the close to the virus in the household, just being responsible to the folks working on retail outlets are very interested in training, so they are not getting too deep in the board box. It's not an arena that 12 to 14 foot tenders are on call. You can tell a patient if you do this at this regimen, they will do this to you. So we get very good retail standards. This is one of our training process for our retail personnel. Any information given solely in the middle of such, and it's not actually medical advice because that's a very slippery slope for business at this point.
Yeah.
wasn't that appealing, I wouldn't have this belt. Packaging requirements those are just friends of Mark's. Really good job at that.
It'll be interesting to see what happens after the election. You have any plans, Bill?
Yeah, 7 o'clock.